I'm Joe Dante.
Legendary director Joe Dante.
And I'm Josh Olson.
Oscar-nominated screenwriter Josh Olson.
And nobody loves movies as much as we do.
Nobody's sane.
And we have a podcast.
Each episode, we track down other filmmakers, comedians, rock stars, authors, and artists, and talk to them about movies.
But not about their movies. Everybody does that.
We talk to them about the movies they love and the movies that have, well,
made them who they are.
Which is why we call our show The Movies That Made Me.
From legendary giants to this year's Oscar winners.
We know them all and we've seen them all.
So check out The Movies That Made Me, the Movie Lovers Podcast.
Available everywhere you find good podcasts. Well, actually, it's available wherever you find podcasts, even the bad ones, but ours is really good.
That's the idea.
I felt like at the end of the movie, there needed to be a line. And we were in his car going to Walmart or some drugstore or something. And he just turned to me and he said, "The love inside, you take it with you." And I was like, that's it.
Welcome back to Light the Fuse presents the Directors. Quiet on set! It's time for the Directors! And here I am. This is Drew Taylor, as always, with my favorite director, Charles. Have you ever had to say, Charles, quiet on set? Or does someone else say that for you?
Someone else says that. Yeah, that's the first AD usually takes care of that. I don't have to yell at all.
But when it happens, do you think, this is cinema?
What's best is if you have a first AD who doesn't even need to yell and they can just kind of do a gentle shushing and get everybody to be quiet. It's good. Yeah.
Do you ever want more energy on set, more activity, more conversation?
I don't know, Drew.
I thought maybe you would kind of pioneer a new style where you encourage people to be louder.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to reinvent the wheel. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, boy. Anyway. I'm sorry Charles couldn't be here this week, but we are here with the second part of our Zaz conversation. And Charles, do you want to remind people of who Zaz are and what contribution they have made to the world of cinema?
Well, they had, yes, the Zaz, three amazing directors who went on to each have their own careers after as working as a team. But they made the classics, Airplane and Top Secret, which we get into a bit today, was not really a classic upon release, but has a big cult following now. And they made the Police Squad TV show, which also similar situation, but then Police Squad led to Naked Gun, which I would say is another classic, full on, spawned many sequels, and is actually, they're doing a remake now as well, I believe.
Yeah.
And we get into a lot of stuff in their career, their careers, I should say, today. And yeah, it's a great conversation. Can't wait for people to hear it.
Great. Well, let's get into it right now, Charles, and then you and I will be back to wrap things up afterwards.
Yes, and I will say quickly before we get into it just that Police Squad, the TV series, is actually on Blu-ray. I bring up that it's on DVD, but it is actually on Blu-ray, but it is not streaming anywhere, unfortunately. So anyway.
Did you buy the Blu-ray?
I did. I upgraded my DVD to the Blu-ray. I had to, so I got it. It's all
great.
Good. And great. It's great. So can't wait for everybody to hear that. We talk about Police Squad and Ghost and all kinds of things.
All right, let's get into it, and we'll be back afterwards.
So I've got to ask, going back to Police Squad, Joe Dante came in and directed a bunch of episodes for you guys, right? And that was before he had done Gremlins or anything, right? He'd only done maybe Piranha at the time. So, yeah. You know, how did you get hooked up with Joe Dante? And how was that relationship working with him on Police Squad?
Joe was great. We knew John Davison, who produced Airplane, was friends with Joe. And did John produce
Piranha?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. So they knew each other. So we met John a while ago, and we just thought he might be good. So we called him, and he was up for it. Joe was great.
He got the joke. He got it. He was of like mind.
Up to a point.
Oh, interesting.
One time when we were doing auditions for one of the episodes he directed, we had one of the writers on the show and the Police Squad show come in and pretend to audition for some part in the episode. And we all knew about it, but Dante didn't, that he was pretending. We were kind of putting Dante on. So the writer came in and started pretending to audition. And we started to talk and eat and be rude and taking phone calls.
Just being rude. Totally.
He was so pissed off.
He was so pissed off.
I don't know he ever forgave us.
I don't think he ever got over it.
Did you ever? He found out then, and then he was mad, or did he never find out?
He found out. I don't think he was happy about it. Yeah,
not happy is an understatement.
Wow. You had another Mission Impossible alum, Peter Lupus, is the original Norberg in the TV show.
Yeah. That was actually a huge thrill for us because we were big Mission Impossible fans, and this was before.
Before we met Peter.
No, it was...
Peter Graves, before we met Peter Graves.
No, it was after, because this was after Airplane.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Jeez, you know, it's tough being elderly. Yeah. I was so convinced
about
it.
You put up a good fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy. You had Peter Lupus, who's amazing in the show. So the show is like, is it going to come out? Is there some rights issue? Like, what can we... It's not streaming anywhere. Like, I always tell people to watch it, but there's, like, hardly any way to see it.
It's on... A DVD, definitely.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm not sure Police Squad is the kind of show you need Blu-ray for.
I think so. I mean, it was so ahead of its time. I mean, it was a single camera shot and, you know, no studio audience, no laugh track. Like,
but it's not visually, it was not ahead of its time in ways.
Yeah, it was behind its time.
But the visual jokes are so, I mean, like the fake freeze frame at the end of every episode is just one of my favorite things. It's so amazing.
No, there were a lot of visual jokes. I just mean not like that would be enhanced by Blu-ray.
Okay.
Well, it would just be nice to be able to see it, I guess.
And some of our favorite jokes from the Police Squad TV series we used in the Naked Gun.
Right.
You know, when they walk around the set, you know, one guy goes to the door and the other guy goes around the end. Yeah. And Al is so tall that he's eating a banana and he says, you got something on your mouth. Yeah. And it's a whole,
banana comes out. Yeah. Yeah.
Jay's right. We could have filmed Police Squad in 16 millimeter and it would have been just as effective. It doesn't need Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Right. I just want it to be available. I want it streaming so people can find it. That's all. You know, like
I think for people who just like watching Blu-ray because of the clarity and the sound and whatever, it's just, you know, if you get used to watching that, then it you know, seems like going back to black and white or something if you're not, you know, without it. So, got it.
Well, so, before we get to the Naked Gun movie, you do Top Secret, also with Paramount, right?
Yes.
Val Kilmer's first movie, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So where did you find Val Kilmer? That's a big find.
We went to New York. We had some New York casting director, and we saw a play called Slab Boys, and I think Sean Penn was in that too.
And Kevin Bacon and Val. We're all in Slab Boys.
Yeah. And so we had him in for an audition and he sang and he actually learned to play the guitar because that one scene where in the script it says, you know, he's singing. And so, he tells the story about how, and then he spent months learning how to play the guitar. And when he's on the set for the scene, we just wanted him to fake playing the guitar. So, and that was the joke.
how does your evolution of, you know, as a directing team, where is it at this point? You know, you guys, how did it go shooting Top Secret? You know, what was that process like working with Paramount? And what was it, you know, as
it was very much the same as everything else, we only everybody now trusted each other, which was their mistake at this point, I think. And we just, our budgets were always
low.
You know, low. You know, we weren't, I think it was like $6 million for Top Secret, which even at the time was not a lot. So
I think they still made a lot of money on Top Secret.
And it was a wonderful year. We got to shoot in London and do post in London. It was just a fabulous year. And in London, they stopped the work days at 5:30. I don't know if it's still that way. But back then, they stopped filming at 5:30. So there was lots of time off.
And if you wanted to go into overtime, the crew would vote.
Right.
Yeah, unheard of in the U.S., yeah.
Plus, at the end of every week, you'd get per diem money in British pounds.
Yeah.
And you could go into a travel agency. And it was like going into a candy store. You could go to, you know, France one weekend and Spain another weekend. It was a phenomenal year.
When you said before that you didn't know how to do a story for a movie because you had just taken 0 hour for Airplane. So where did Top Secret come from?
Well, exactly. That's what part of what we started to learn after Airplane. Top Secret, we couldn't think of one single genre to mimic, to make fun of. So we kind of meshed Elvis movies with World War II movies, which was a huge mistake, but that we didn't understand at the time. And that was the kind of weak launch pad for Top Secret. And, you know, if you're going to do parody, I think what you need to do, and if you look at the history of parody, you have to have one single solid foundation that you're parodying, but we didn't get that at the time.
Yeah, I've got to go. Can you guys take it from here?
We'll take it from
okay.
Here.
Of course.
It's great talking to you,
okay.
David.
Thank you. They'll never know the difference.
All right. Yeah. Just Jerry, you can kind of do my voice, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Back with more from the Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams after the break.
Hi, I'm Joe Dante.
Legendary director Joe Dante.
And I'm Josh Olson.
Oscar-nominated screenwriter Josh Olson.
And nobody loves movies as much as we do.
Nobody's sane.
And we have a podcast.
Each episode, we track down other filmmakers, comedians, rock stars, authors, and artists, and talk to them about movies.
But not about their movies. Everybody does that.
We talk to them about the movies they love and the movies that have, well,
made them who they are.
Which is why we call our show The Movies That Made Me.
From legendary giants to this year's Oscar winners.
We know them all and we've seen them all.
So check out The Movies That Made Me, the Movie Lovers Podcast.
Available everywhere you find good podcasts. Well, actually, it's available wherever you find podcasts, even the bad ones. But ours is really good.
That's the idea.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Well, I know the movie didn't do very well. Also, Police Squad, we didn't talk about, also, you know, got canceled after only one season, sadly. But I feel like there's a cult following for these things. I mean, are you not happy with these, with how these turned out?
I think Top Secret has some of the best jokes we ever put on film, you know? And so I think we're proud of Top Secret. I would say, Jim is correct about the problems of combining two things, but I think the worst thing was that there was no character, and we just didn't understand that. And it was there for us in 0 hour, but, you know, we just thought, okay, we take this guy, he's coming into East Germany, and we do... And we may have been able to switch back and forth, I don't know, without confusing people a lot, maybe not, but not without a character that has some, you know, a problem or reason for being there, or, you know, that that thing at the end of the first act, which, now there's a big problem. And how is this going to affect him? And, so we realized it was a big blundering lesson for us. And I think we corrected all that stuff in Naked Gun. As far as Police Squad goes, I think we just, we were of two minds, because all things being equal, we'd rather succeed than fail. But we really, doing a show a week was a lot for us. That's not our, we're used to taking a year to write something, and then a year to direct it and edit and everything. And here we were doing, and that's for 90 minutes. And here we're doing 24 minutes a week. And it was just we and trying to manage other writers and directors. And it was fun. And I think the show was good. And also, Tony Thermopoulos kind of said it best. He said, the show didn't work because you had to watch it. Well, I think what he meant was that a lot of shows, people are eating, talking, socializing, they're whatever it's on in the background, and it's just kind of fun. You have to go away. And we shot ours like a movie. Like, you go in, turn off the lights, face forward, and watch the thing. And we heard that on a lot of university campuses on Tuesday night or whenever it was, everyone would gather in the commons, and that's what would happen. And they would all be laughing, right. and it would play great for them. But as for the millions of television watchers, it really wasn't the right for television.
Right. You had to pay attention to get to see the jokes.
Going back to what Jerry was saying, when you think about it, the Bob Hayes' character in Airplane was a guy with PTSD who was losing his girlfriend, who had to get on an airplane and overcome his internal problems in order to fly down the airplane after there was food poisoning. So there's a wonderful character arc. In Top Secret, Val was kind of a jerk rock and roll star who in the middle became a jerk rock and roll star and ended up a jerk rock and roll star. So there really was no character arc.
Right.
And even though it's parody, and you tend to think, oh, they're just silly movies, it really takes the nuts and bolts of decent screenwriting to make a parody.
Yeah, but with Val's character, we got credit for consistency, right?
Well, and to be honest, Val picked up on it. He knew before we did that there was something wrong there, and he needed more character.
He should have said something.
Well, before you made the Police Squad movie, you followed Eisner and Katzenberg to Disney for Ruthless People, and Jim, you wrote Big Business as well over there. What was that experience like? It was kind of an exciting time for the company, and they were doing all these new things, and you guys were definitely on the forefront of that.
Right, that was after Police Squad, before Naked Gun, right?
Yeah.
Ruthless People is the last one that you guys are credited as directing together as a team.
Right, yeah.
But Naked Gun came after that, right?
Yeah. So what was the Ruthless People?
It was great. I mean, we liked Katzenberg and Eisner, and Dale Launer had written a brilliant script. And but I think the problem for us was it wasn't our style. It was comedy, and so we knew how to get laughs, but it wasn't our style. So we tended to have more disagreements, and they were the kind of disagreements that either opinion could have been right. Whereas Airplane and that, there was one right answer. It was in our minds and we all knew it. It was more just problem solving. How do we get there? And so it was But it was still really fun. You know, we still had a great time, and Bette and Danny were great, you know, and mm-hmm. and I think it was Bill Pullman's first part, was it? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And you shot with Jan de Bont. What was that like?
I wanted to ask that too. Thank you, Drew. Yes.
Yes, of course.
Jan de Bont was great. We loved Jan, although he was very, you could kind of see that one day he probably was going to be a director. He would sometimes, if he was watching the shot on a video and there was a bump in it, a small bump or something, he would go, cut, cut. And we would yell, Jan, let us cut. You know, tell us later that we should throw it out or whatever. Because also for us, if the take was fantastic, but there was a little bump, maybe, you know, probably nobody would notice anyway. So we're not perfectionists in that regard. But he had a lot of, Jan had style, and he was really helpful in mapping out the shots and all.
But in terms of our, David and Jerry and me working together, it really was the only time when we were trying to make someone else's material, you know, Dale Launer's script. And it really, by that time, each of us was confident in his own ability to make decisions. We didn't need the three of us collaborating on every decision. And we really did have sort of separate visions of that movie. So that was, in a very healthy way, the beginning of the end of our collaboration.
Well, still made a great movie. And then you end up doing Naked Gun. And now that, you know, now that David's off the call, you can tell us why did he get the directing job on that one? And because that was the first Naked Gun movie, the last time that you all wrote something together?
I think so. Yeah. We other than maybe a little something, not a movie. It's the last time we wrote a movie together, certainly. But yeah, I think we all had things that we wanted, and I personally didn't want to do another satire right away. I was just looking for something different, and David really did. He just, you know, loved the genre, wanted to do it again. And so we thought, well, why don't we write this together and then David can direct it? But Jim and I were on the set a lot, you know, I think one of us was there almost all the time, just checking in and
making sure he's not going to screw it up.
Making sure he didn't fuck it up.
Well, amazing. I have to say that to give you a compliment, this is going to be maybe a weird compliment, but whenever I've had surgery the last couple of years, and whenever I'm like really sick or whatever, the thing that I do on those days when I'm in horrible pain, I watch all three Naked Gun movies. I watch Hot Shots movies. This is like my medicine. Like, it helps me get through the most painful days of my life. So I have to give you that compliment to let you
know. I didn't know he was going to bring this up. This is this is very weird. I'm sorry.
But it's true. It really means so much to me, those movies. And it's so great to watch all of them, and I just do them all in a day, just to like, and it just helps me laugh in moments when I'm in horrible pain.
That's right. You should have started off with that. It would have been a much better injury.
Sorry.
No, I love that level of devotion, but also, you know, we've gotten a lot of actually letters now, which is very odd to us, of people talking about how, you know, a parent is like a father is dying, and they talk about, and the one thing they had bonded on was they both loved these kind of, you know, those movies. And so they would, you know, go recite lines and stuff like that, and talk about it or watch the movies. It's so funny because it's such a whole nother thing that we never would have expected, you know, making it, that it actually helped people bond with their parents or children or whatever.
That's so cool.
It's a big bond for me with my brother. My brother and I text about, He'll just text me. He'll text me lines from the Naked Gun movies or whatever. You know, yeah, it's just a...
Yeah.
Charles, they're gonna start charging us for the therapy here. We'll be back with more from the Zazz team after the break.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game. Headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Before we go, Jerry, we have to ask about Ghost, another yes. Paramount classic. It was the highest grossing movie of 1990 and at the time the third highest grossing movie ever.
Wow.
Think about a movie like Ghost making that kind of money today. I mean, it's absolutely unfathomable. But what drew you to that? Did you know that you had something really special?
Well, I think I was just, at the time looking for something interesting and not a satire, but a comedy drama. I don't know, just a good piece of material. So I was very open. And Lindsay Duran, who was our executive at Paramount, we had lunch and she said, the best script we have here is a script called Ghost. It's not a comedy, but it has comedy. You can read it if you want. And I did, and I thought it was great. You know, I mean, I really, it's funny. It's just, it's kind of, for me, it's also a matter of, I can see myself doing this. You know, I know how to do this because I've read good scripts that I didn't get, you know, or know how to do. So, and I was lucky that we were at Paramount because they knew me. And so, because I don't think if this script was at any other studio, they would have let me direct it. And I think Paramount wanted it to be a little like the idea of putting more comedy into it or, make it tighter, whatever. And so I met Bruce Rubin, who cried when he found out, you know, the co-director of Airplane was going to direct his beautiful spiritual love story. But we had dinner and we really got along. So he kind of said, okay. And, you know, not that he had a choice particularly because the studio was very adamant about it. But so we just said, okay. It almost fell apart because we didn't have a Sam. And I wasn't crazy about Patrick Swayze because, you know, I had seen Roadhouse and these other a lot of his other movies, but he asked if he could audition. And I said, well, of course. I mean, he's Patrick Swayze. He doesn't normally audition for movies. So he did. And I just saw my movie Worky in front of me. He was great, you know? And so we gave him the part and the movie got going. And I did, you know, I believed in it, but more and more, the more we got along with it, the more time went by, the more I really thought this could be something. But I don't think at the time I thought it was going to be what it was. I just thought, okay, this could be a really entertaining movie that I could make.
Yes.
Well, you also got to scar a lot of us when we were very young when that came out with when Tony Goldwyn's death yes. is the, maybe the most
sound,
graphic
the sound of
death
those,
in
of
a those, PG.
Yeah. Like, oh.
Well, no, but just but him yeah. getting cut open and all that stuff is pretty hardcore. So also, that must have been fun.
Yeah. That's the part that I'm not good at. And I don't even like movies that have a lot of gore in them. But, you know, it was important. And
it was effective.
And is effective in the way he got killed and everything. So, and the effects guys were great. So, yeah, good. Go for it.
Jim, did you like Ghost?
Loved it. If you can make a movie that works, that ends with it somewhere near, that's about when you die, you take the love with you. That's a universal theme. And I think that had a lot to do with the huge success of the movie. When you die, you take the love with you. That's something all of us want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was interesting too, that that line wasn't in the script at the beginning, and we were in pre-production, all that. And I went to Bruce and I said, we've got to, the movie is great, but we have to codify this. And so we actually started talking about what's the movie about. And we all, you know, Bruce is deeply into the spiritual realm and those themes and all that, and all through the film. But just what is it about in a sentence? I felt like at the end of the movie, there needed to be a line. And I think in his car going to Walmart or some drugstore or something. And he just turned to me and he said, "The love inside, you take it with you." And I was like, that's it.
Amazing.
I never heard that story. That's great.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's how it got in. But and I think about that all the time, the idea of how do you end the movie in some way? It doesn't have to be a line, a moment, or a line that wraps it up.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit reminiscent for me of The End of Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah.
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 You know, it's that some sort of positive feeling about death, that it's not over. And
yeah,
it's the great thing about Bruce is that it wasn't a contrivance for him. He takes this stuff seriously. And although he doesn't necessarily believe that ghosts on subways smash windows, the underlying sort of principles are correct. And sometimes I would come to him and say, "Oh, Bruce, what if the guy does this and the ghost this and that?" And Bruce would listen and go, "Well, that's not exactly the way it works." So it was kind of like making a war movie and having a general there too, you know.
Right. Well, Jim, quickly, just thank you so much for the Hot Shots movies, the joke in Hot Shots 2 that my roommate in college, I have to bring up, he and I died laughing. We talk about it all the time. When Martin Sheen and Charlie Sheen have the competing narration, and then the line that you chose for them to say to each other, "I loved you in Wall Street." One of my favorite things that I don't know how choosing that line, whatever, that's just the most amazing thing ever. I love it so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
You always compliment me on writing Hot Shots lines. You know,
guys, thank you so much for coming on. Genuine legends, always a thrill to get to chat with you. If you ever need anything, please reach out to us. And it was such an honor to get to talk to you.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you, Drew. Thank you, Charles. And I Charles, I hope you have more horrible pain so you can watch the movie.
I also wish that he would have more horrible pain as well. So, yes, thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. All right, Charles, that's it. No more time with Zaz. You're never going to see him again. Sorry.
Wow. Brutal.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll never see him again. But I will say that they did also write a book about the making of Airplane. It's called Surely You Can't Be Serious, The True Story of Airplane. And I'm very excited to read this book. And we probably should have read it before we talked to them. But hey, you know.
Whatever. We're busy, I guess.
I don't know.
I didn't really know about the book until they referenced it in our interview. So I don't know. Listen, I
blame the book publisher then for not getting the word out.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? If you want more stories from Airplane, that's a perfect place to go. So it's not either or, Charles, you know?
No, I feel like it's the perfect compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
So what have we learned? What did we get out of this?
Well, what I found very interesting was their kind of forensic breakdown of why they felt that Top Secret didn't work. That was really interesting to know and to hear that they felt like they bit off too much to chew in terms of genre, in terms of tone, in terms of character. I thought that was really interesting.
Yes, and that they felt like there should have been character growth.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know the movie didn't land at the box office, but it has a lot of passionate supporters, you know? And I don't think that they missed the mark as much as they think they did with Top Secret, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little too much trying to parody the Elvis movies too or something, maybe. I don't know. But it's a lovely movie. It's great.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's very interesting that you can stew about something for 30, 40 years.
I know. Yeah, it could just haunt you forever. You. And
why did we do it that way?
So much of it can be timing and so many other factors that are beyond your control. People can love the movie and it just didn't connect in that moment for whatever reason, but it has connected with people since then.
Yeah, and then I loved hearing about Ghost because, you know, as we talk about, it's such an interesting movie in terms of it being a phenomenon.
Yeah.
That nothing like that could probably happen today.
Yeah. It's also like just a really fascinating movie. It's a really interesting movie in general, just what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so romantic and haunting and funny and scary. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of movie and it all works. It's really a great movie.
Yeah. And Vincent Schiavelli in the subway is something that I think about a lot. I love that.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that whole section of the movie. Yeah, it's just, it's great. And it was cool to talk about Ruthless People too, which I went back and revisited. I hadn't watched it in years, and that movie rules.
Yeah. They didn't like working with Disney, I'll say that. But that'll be for another podcast called They Didn't Like Working for Disney that Charles and I will be starting relatively soon. No, just kidding. We're here for you always. But Charles, tell people how they can watch these movies that we talk about.
Well,
so much.
I will say that Airplane and Top Secret are available on DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. And Naked Gun is available in a limited edition 4K UHD steelbook, also on DVD and Blu-ray and digital. And we will be doing a giveaway of both the Naked Gun 4K steelbook and the special Paramount Presents Airplane remastered Blu-ray. So very excited to be doing those giveaways. Stay tuned to our social media, please, if you want a chance to win those.
And Ghost?
Ghost, I don't have any information for you on that, but it is available, I'm sure. Did they do a Paramount Presents of Ghost?
I don't know if there's a Paramount Presents, but it is available on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital. Let me see if there is a Paramount Presents. There is a Paramount Presents, Charles. Boy, you love your Paramount Presents. I'll tell you that.
It's a great series, I will say. Paramount Presents, I've got several of them. I got the Terms of Endearment 4K recently. I mean, they do good stuff. Gotta say.
Yeah, there was a Ghost Paramount Presents that came out in 2020, a year we do not want to remember. But I'm looking at a review right now and it says, highly recommended even for those upgrading from the original release. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. And then, Charles, I just want to remind everybody to like, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever they are listening to it. And as always, we want to thank you for going on this journey with us. I know we are kind of expanding our reach, our realms, and we really appreciate everybody for sticking around with us. And we've got more great stuff. Who do we have next, Charles?
Next up, we have Howard Deutsch, the director of Pretty in Pink and Some Kind of Wonderful. It is a great conversation we have with him. It is awesome to talk about those movies and his relationship with John Hughes, who wrote those films, and other work he did in his career as well. It's a great talk. Can't wait for people to hear it.
Great. So come back next week for that.
Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, is produced by Charles Hood. That's me and Drew Taylor. Our supervising producer is Abby Smith. This episode was edited by Luke Burson with music by Kevin Blumenfeld. This podcast is a production of Paramount Pictures. All rights are reserved.
Hi, I'm
I'm Joe Dante.
Legendary director Joe Dante.
And I'm Josh Olson.
Oscar-nominated screenwriter Josh Olson.
And nobody loves movies as much as we do.
Nobody's sane.
And we have a podcast.
Each episode, we track down other filmmakers, comedians, rock stars, authors, and artists, and talk to them about movies.
But not about their movies. Everybody does that.
We talk to them about the movies they love and the movies that have, well,
made them who they are.
Which is why we call our show The Movies That Made Me.
From legendary giants to this year's Oscar winners.
We know them all and we've seen them all.
So check out The Movies That Made Me, the Movie Lovers Podcast.
Available everywhere you find good podcasts. Well, actually, it's available wherever you find podcasts, even the bad ones. But ours is really good.
That's the idea.